talks aimed at securing the rights of Iranian people by removing all sanctions imposed on the country. Negotiations between Iran and the P4+1 is slated to be kicking off in Vienna on November 29th. Tehran wants the party that left the deal, that is the United States, to lift anti-Iran sanctions and offer guarantees not to scrap the deal again.
The Vienna talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal are only 2 weeks away. But U.S. President Joe Biden has so far refused to return his country to compliance with the accord or remove Washington's unilateral sanctions on Tehran. That despite the very fact that the UN-endorsed deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, was reached during his vice presidency. Iran has times and again stressed that the removal of U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner is the main agenda of the upcoming talks. Tehran also says that it is ready to reach a good agreement during the Vienna talks, but not at any price. President Ebrahim Raisi says his government is serious about the talks that should aim to secure the rights of its people by removing all sanctions. Iran's stance is echoed by Russia. During a phone call with Raisi on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin reaffirmed his country's support for nuclear rights of the Iranian nation and the removal of sanctions. Also last week, the Russian foreign minister said his country would seek the full implementation of the JCPOA in the Vienna talks. Sergei Lavrov also called on the US to honor its obligations, which include lifting all sanctions on Tehran. Also on Monday, deputy foreign ministers of China and Russia, during a virtual meeting with their Iranian counterpart, stressed that Washington's unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA and its sanctions are the main obstacles to the implementation of the accord. Former US President Donald Trump withdrew his country from the accord in 2018 and reimposed all the anti-Iran sanctions that had been lifted under the deal. Iran waited for a year to see if the European signatories could salvage it. But the European inaction prompted the country to begin gradually scaling back some of its commitments under the JCPOA. Now the current US president says Washington will return to its compliance with the deal if Tehran does the same. The Islamic Republic stresses that it was the US that abandoned the deal and must take the first step toward its revival by removing sanctions. So far, the actions taken by the Biden administration contradict its words that it wants to return to the accord. Last week, for instance, Biden encouraged other countries to stop purchasing Iran's oil. Experts believe Washington's withdrawal from the JCPOA, as well as its failed policies globally, have damaged its credibility.
I think the Biden administration, in spite of Mr. Trump's withdrawal from JCPOA, certainly undoing that may do Mr. Biden some good, but I think, unfortunately, Washington's credibility has been damaged, not just because of the JCPOA, but all these other accords that some people in Washington, especially the last occupant of the White House, thought or assume you can just walk in and walk out of.
No matter what happens in the upcoming talks in Vienna, but one thing is clear, though. Washington's influence in West Asia is waning. The U.S. and its Western allies have already failed in their plot to topple Syria's President Bashar al-Assad, despite years of backing they provided to terrorist groups there. In Yemen, U.S. logistic and military support for years-long Saudi war have failed to bring the Yemeni people to their knees. And the U.S. hasty withdrawal from Afghanistan recently proved it spent billions of dollars of taxpayers' money on the futile war.
Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Behrouz Najib, and today we're discussing JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. Let me introduce our guests in this edition. Editor of the Veterans Today, Mike Harris, joining us out of Phoenix, Arizona. Also with us, we'll have political commentator and peace activist Brian Otero from Malloy, Iowa.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome, gentlemen, both to the show. Let me turn to Phoenix. Mike, Iran officials have stated that clearly that they are intent on serious talks in Vienna aimed at sanctions removal. What about Washington? Is it serious?
That remains to be seen. One has to realize that sanctions are really a very soft form of warfare intended to weaken the targeted country. And as long as sanctions are in place, Iran or any other country, Russia, for instance, has to be wary that the intention of the country imposing the sanctions, in this case the USA, is to weaken them over the long term by denying them, expendable products and parts and other things that that help sustain an economy and help sustain a country. And so if Washington was truly serious about this as a gesture of good faith, they should at least begin removing the sanctions, perhaps in a phased manner that would allow the Iranian government to gain some confidence that Washington is indeed sincere in their talks about reinstating the JCPOA and coming to some sort of an accord.
Right. Now, Brian, there are contradictory words and actions, and they make you wonder what exactly the White House is after. You know, they want Iran to go back to the negotiating table. So why did they impose fresh sanctions instead of removing the previous ones, like just Mike referred to? And is the U.S. sending the right signal this way?
No, it's not. And I would disagree on a slight thing with the other speaker that sanctions are not a soft form of warfare. It's a very deadly form of warfare, and there it's a matter of life and death, and there are people who are dying who don't need to die because of these sanctions. It's a very aggressive and very violent. It is a form of warfare, yes, but there's no such thing as any soft warfare. But I don't think it's in the interest of the U.S. to have have an agreement here. It's in the interest of the U.S. or the people of the United States and our stated objectives, but it is not in the interest of the military-industrial complex, which really is the driving force in this country. Peace breaking out, in the words of the CEO of Raytheon Corporation, is something to be avoided, and he's hoping that the Middle East will remain a place of positive growth in the coming years.
Now, Mike, apart from the optics and the rhetoric, do you see any change between the performance of the past and current U.S. administrations when it comes to dealing with a so-called maximum pressure campaign and sanctions against Iran?
Well, I don't see them having any effect at all. One of the things that the sanctions has done, anywhere that the U.S. applies them long-term, is they force the country that's being subjected to the sanctions to develop their own in-country supply chains and become more self-reliant. So truly, they're making the country stronger and not dependent upon international trade or international goods. Right. So they're making a more self-reliant, more resilient country rather than weakening them, because anything that can be done over in another country can also be done internally to the country that's being sanctioned. So this has been very noticeable in Russia, and is also noticeable in Iran because of the manufacture of pharmaceuticals and other things that's been occurring that have been withheld from these countries. So sanctions are really self-defeating. They're damaging in the short term, but in the long term, they create a more self-reliant country. So the U.S., what they're doing doesn't work. the U.S. State Department is broken. They've had misguided policies. They've been misguided since 9/11 broke out and this whole war on terror thing. Their previous guess was correct that the war machine likes to be fed, and they're hoping to keep this stirred up. But there's a better approach to this, and that is, what is the source of the animosity that the U.S., Israel, and a lot of the West has against Iran and against Russia? Are they just looking for the next victim to plunder, to create a war? Or is there a deeper underlying cause? And once these questions are answered, we'll have a better view into what the real motivation is of the U.S. And so if we're going to talk the JCPOA give up nuclear weapons, why not have the Middle East give up nuclear weapons? In fact, the entire world give up nuclear weapons, because Israel has a very robust nuclear program and nobody discusses it. And the U.S. is violating its own laws that says that they can't give aid or can't do commerce with any country that's not a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, but yet Israel has more influence over the U.S. Foreign policy than the American citizens do.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and then the U.S. has used a bomb against people in Japan. Iran never initiated any war. Okay, Brian, I wanted you to draw a comparison, if there can be, any comparison between the present U.S. administration and the previous one when it comes to sanctions and all that pressure on Iran. Any change?
No, I think your previous question about what, aside from optics and rhetoric, is the difference. Mm-hmm. You take that away and there's no question anymore. You can't talk about it anymore. But I think it's right that we need to focus on whenever there's a proliferation of weapons or threat of proliferation, rather than look at the new countries coming along, look at the fact that, as our friend said, with Israel, we have plausible deniability. Israel's a huge nuclear force in the area. And because we can't talk about it, they get to have the threat of using nuclear weapons without having the accountability. And we're violating these laws all the time. The United States is presently in the taking part in a trillion-dollar, more than trillion-dollar program to modernize our nuclear weapons. In 2019, there was a report by the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States that said nuclear weapons could have decisive results for restoration of strategic stability and create conditions how commanders can prevail in combat. So if for these past decades we've not had a nuclear war because the very fact that that it's unthinkable that the results would be, everyone would lose and there's no winner in a nuclear war. Well, the United States is now putting a lot of money into the idea that a nuclear war can be won. And if we're looking at the threat of nuclear proliferation, we need to look at the United States first. And if we're, any talk about sanctions, I'm saying this as an American too, that sanctions ought to be brought against the country that is driving this race and in nuclear weapons and provoking hostilities, in Iran, in the South China Sea, on the border with Russia. These are provocations that are going on daily.
Okay. Now, Mike, as you know, Tehran embarked on marathon talks with world powers, eventually signed the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. It did remain in full compliance as endorsed by the IAEA until more than a year, and that was after the U.S. left, more than a year after the President Trump pulled his country out of this deal and reimposed sanctions on Iran. So how can Iran make sure this time around that the U.S. won't renege on its commitments under a new administration and won't scrap the deal again?
Well, as long as the State Department remains in its current form and our Defense Department remains in its current form, you cannot trust the USA at all. Our country is run by gangsters, and it has been for some time. Any promises, any treaties that the U.S. Gives aren't worth the paper they're written on. And we as American people have seen the betrayal of our own government against us and the social contract we have with them via our Constitution. They're running roughshod over us right now. And so our government is not to be trusted. It is run by gangsters. And it's time for regime change within the U.S. and to restore ourselves to a more constitutional republic that respects the will of the people. As it is now, there's more foreign influence, has greater influence over U.S. foreign policy than the American people do. We have lost our voice, and we're being taken for granted, and our form of government, the constitutional republic, is a joke among us American people. We don't believe in the process anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the primary reason to have nuclear weapons, as Brian, the previous guest, said, is to deter any sort of warfare. And it's such dangerous thinking for the U.S. to think they can win a nuclear war, which is an unwinnable proposition. It is just insanity to do that. We had the MAD doctrine for a number of years with the Soviet Union, where both parties were afraid to engage in a nuclear war, fearing the devastation. Well, bad thinking within the Defense Department, the State Department, has gotten people thinking that they can possibly win this. They're going to end humanity on this planet. And that's not what we're here for. We're here to let's redeploy the war machine, and let's turn it into a war machine into a space exploration and development machine. There's far more profit out there than there's blowing up all life on this planet. Right. And it's time that I don't care if Iran has a nuclear weapon. The only reason to have one is to keep other people from invading you. And the U.S., through its behavior since 9/11, has proven to the world that they're not afraid to go in and just wreak havoc. They don't win wars. They go in and destroy countries. There's a big difference between that. And the U.S. has completely unjustified this foreign policy, and shame on our government and the gangsters that run it.
Okay. Now, Brian, when it comes to matters of trust and Iran asking for a guarantee, it's, you know, because of things like U.S. Senator Ted Cruz threatening that any future Republican president would tear a deal with Iran. And also we had President Biden just recently telling world countries not to buy Iranian oil, to just keep, sanctioning the country. Are these signs of good faith or bad faith in negotiations? And then they're pushing Iran to go to the negotiating table.
No, it's totally in bad faith. And it's what Ted Cruz is saying, and others would agree with them, I'm afraid, is the United States, as Mike said, is not the treaties we sign are not worth the paper they're printed on, and it makes it entirely incoherent if the next administration can deny these things. In the United States Constitution, there's the Supremacy Clause, the sixth article of the Constitution. Not that that's worth all that much anymore, says that any treaty that the United States enters into and is ratified is the supreme law of the land. So when the United States is violating these treaties, it's violating international law, and it's violating U.S. law too, and it's undermining, as the other guest said, the confidence that anyone can have in the United States government, both foreign and domestic.
Right. Now, Mike, let's talk about Europe, the European side of the Iran nuclear deal. They failed to make good on their promises, of course, under pressure from the U.S., and they didn't keep their own commitments. Later on, they came with their own proposal, a 12-point thing. They didn't live up to that either. So any sign they will this time around?
Well, they're waiting for the U.S. to make a move. The U.S. has really got Europe under its thumb to a great degree. And Europe needs to act independently with or without the U.S., but the pressure doesn't come only from the U.S., but from the global banking cartel, if you will. Mm-hmm. And any country that doesn't play ball and follow this line of hostility against Iran and against Russia and against any other country that is not part of the global banking system, integrated to it and subservient to it, doesn't get treated very well and is portrayed in our media as a pariah state. And so until these things can be addressed and until parity can be brought back and the voice of the people can be heard over the financial interest of the banks and big business, the war machine, et cetera, we're not going to get very far. And it's time, as I said before, it's time for regime change in the U.S. And it's time for us to restructure our global economy in a manner that is more egalitarian and is more beneficial to the people rather than the few oligarchs who end up running these countries and end up setting foreign policy for the entire planet.
Brian, there are some hawks in Washington. They've been speaking of entering negotiations on Iran's missile program. Tehran, of course, has stated its missile program as a deterrent. It's non-negotiable. I mean, how can they ask for, talking about something else and, discussing another deal, whereas they have torpedoed the other one, JCPA that we're talking about. That's one thing. And also, basically, why should Iran negotiate its deterrence? No country would do that.
Yeah, I deplore how much money and resources of the countries of the world are spending on weapons. And I hate to see another weapon system, but I think we have to trace, where is this coming from? Why? It's coming from the provocations of the United States, and you can't expect another country to disarm. Now, back on the 29th of last month, Antony Blinken, U.S. Secretary of State, announced more sanctions against Iran over its drone program, mm-hmm. and saying that the Iranian-made drones in the region are destabilizing the area, that was only 2 months after the United States, in the city of Kabul, killed the Ahmadi family, a family of seven children, using a drone.
Yeah, exactly.
And thousands of people being killed. How the U.S. drones have been destabilizing Pakistan, Yemen,
exactly.
Afghanistan, and then to have the nerve, the absolute nerve, to mm-hmm. say that these Iranian drones, much smaller program, are destabilizing. Perhaps that's true, but that's not for the United States to put sanctions on Iran over their drone program.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the U.S. drone that entered Iranian territorial waters, and Iran brought it down. Iran never did anything like that. Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this edition of The Spotlight. Let me thank our guests. We had editor of The Veterans Today, Mike Harris, joining us from Phoenix, and political commentator and peace activist Brian Terror from Malloy. I've been your host, Behrouz Najafi, and I'll see you next time.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani.
فمتا شئت استفتحت بالدعاء همین که دعا کردی.
امام علی علیه السلام in a beautiful tradition states, whenever you recite a dua, a supplication, and ask Allah for something, the keys to the divine treasures of Allah are given to you. Now what is our fault in recognizing Allah? This is what we need to pay attention to. Either, God forbid, we do not consider Allah powerful, or God forbid, we consider Him miserly. Our fault is one of these two cases.
اگر یقین داشته باشیم ما به قدرتش,
if we are certain that Allah is all powerful and not at all a miser about His divine treasures, and in fact He is the absolute generous, we will never find ourselves unanswered and empty-handed.
هیچ وقت کوتاه نمی‌ماند.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, where we listen to a speech by Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tehrani. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We will be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iran's envoy for Afghanistan, Hassan Kazemi Qumi, has arrived in Kabul for talks on mutual and regional issues. This is the first time that a high-ranking Iranian delegation is visiting Afghanistan since the takeover of the country by the Taliban in August. In an address to reporters upon his arrival in Kabul airport, the Iranian envoy said he would meet senior Taliban officials, adding that security and economic issues would top the agenda. He stressed that two neighboring countries need to expand their ties in all areas.
Afghanistan has been destroyed by invaders over the past decades. Now it's time to rebuild the country. We will help our Afghan brothers rebuild their country. A secure Afghanistan can contribute to regional stability. Afghanistan and Iran should have safe borders and expand their economic ties amid U.S. sanctions. We also need to cooperate in the fight against terrorism, as our enemies are conducting proxy wars after their repeated defeats in the region.
On the other hand, the Taliban have voiced their interest in the expansion of ties with Iran. They vow to continue their talks with the aim of increasing mutual cooperation.
Iran's move to send its special envoy means that the country is seeking to establish normal relations with us and increase the level of cooperation between the two sides. We have many things in common, particularly when it comes to border security and economic exchanges, so we have to continue our talks.
Tehran has stressed the necessity to establish an inclusive government in Afghanistan, representing all sections of Afghan society. Iran has repeatedly condemned any form of terrorism in Afghanistan and expressed its deep concerns over the fate of Afghan civilians, particularly following the recent terrorist attacks which left hundreds of Shia Afghans dead or wounded. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Israel has always touted its intelligence agency as invulnerable, but a spate of recent hacking attacks against the regime has undermined the narrative. A hacking group which calls itself Moses' Staff has released a video saying it has successfully carried out a massive cyber attack on Israel and broken into the servers of its major companies. The group says it is now in possession of comprehensive data which include information on the location and properties of the regime's sensitive and vital systems across the occupied Palestinian territories. The data also includes airborne mapping surveys with 5-centimeter accuracy and three-dimensional images of Israeli military sites. Moses' Staff is the third group of its kind that has exclusively hacked Israeli organizations and released confidential information of high-ranking military officials in cyberspace in recent months. Such cyber attacks have exposed the weakness of Israel's spying apparatus. But such incidents are just the tip of the iceberg. In September, six Palestinian inmates escaped from one of Israel's highest security jails, which was described by Palestinian resistance groups as a major intelligence failure. Following Israel's 11-day war on Gaza in May, the regime's intelligence and spying fiasco also made headlines. This was due to severe blows the regime received after Palestinians fired thousands of rockets into Israel. At that time, Palestinian media said the Israeli spying services could not predict Hamas and Islamic Jihad movement's tactics to beat the regime's most wanted Iron Dome system. Israeli media also called for a purge of the regime's military leaders for their role in the failed war on Gaza. Such failures come amid internal divisions inside Mossad. Recently, three senior Mossad officials stepped down over what was cited as organizational changes by the agency's new chief, David Barnier. However, Israeli media have described their resignations as an earthquake. Such a description has highlighted major setbacks Mossad has suffered not only in field operations but also in cyberspace. The blows that Israel has received have further shattered the image of its invulnerability.
A weekend terror incident in Liverpool, UK.
One man killed, one injured, and four aged between 20 and 29 arrested under the controversial counterterrorism law. The mood among some, one of shock and disbelief.
Honestly, shock. You know, I couldn't believe it. I've never been around anything like this in my life. I moved up here just for uni, so to have something happen like this, you know, right next to my accommodation is very scary.
Police say the passenger, 32-year-old Iman Al-Suwaylmin, carried a homemade explosive device into the taxi. The driver, David Perry, who locked the suspect in the car to prevent a worse situation, escaped with minor injuries. The timing has had everyone thinking. Just 2 minutes before Remembrance Sunday, when the entire country remembers Britons killed in wars. In Monday, the government raised the terror threat level from substantial to severe, warning residents to be vigilant.
The police have now confirmed that this is being treated as a terrorist attack, and while the investigation continues at pace, you will understand that I can't comment on the details of the case or its motivation, but it is a stark reminder of the need for us all to remain utterly vigilant.
There are still three police cordons in the city, one here at the Women's Hospital, the site of the explosion, and the two major streets elsewhere. Police are still investigating to establish the circumstances of what happened. Police are still searching two addresses for more clues into the motivation behind the incident. Saeed Puriza, Liverpool.
The violence in Myanmar was not enough for us, says the desperate woman upon our arrival. She says we are calling God in every possible way, but looks like our prayers are not being heard. She has many complaints, yet she can talk about the basic ones.
There is a huge list of problems that we are facing, but the major issue is every one of us has not received free COVID vaccination, and many had to spend their own money to get those. Another major hurdle is the lack of toilets for us and shortage of water supply. With regards to food, God sends many good people to feed us almost every day.
After fleeing war-ravaged Myanmar and what the UN described as ethnic cleansing, they are now trying to rebuild their shattered lives in different parts of India. But in India, they are sometimes called termites, sometimes illegal immigrants. Apparently, they are also accused of illegal activities, but these claims were not reflected in the recently released National Crime Records Bureau analysis.
Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which means the world is one family, sounds like an encouraging phrase. But looking at the living conditions of these refugees leads one to ask question whether the world has abandoned its responsibility towards them.
Rohingya refugees are struggling to survive in the world's largest democracy with enormous quantities of effort. Over the last few years, the community is in utter distress, sometimes detention in midnight raids, sometimes their camps being mysteriously burnt down. Regardless of the refugee crisis across the world, this particular community continues to be unseen victims of violence.
Since our camp was razed down by fire, we have relocated to this place, and it's a very difficult situation in terms of living in crumbling space. We are having shortage of water supplies. A tanker arrives and it finishes within an hour. Another major issue is snakes on this land and the lack of toilets for women.
Official estimates suggest more than 40,000 Rohingya Muslims have sought refuge in India after a brutal crackdown against their community in Myanmar. Many refugees say they felt safe in India since they arrived, but over the last few years, a vicious campaign against their expulsion is haunting the community.
In an interview released by Al-Qaeda's media, the leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Khaled Batarfi, admitted that the terrorists have been fighting forces of Yemen's Ansarullah movement on 11 fronts. Batarfi said the role in fighting the Houthi fighters is clear and no one can deny it. This raises a fresh speculation about the cooperation between the Saudi-led forces and the Al-Qaeda terrorists, previously reported by media, including the 2016 battle for Taiz.
Al-Qaeda leader's confession of their participation in the battles against the Yemeni army confirms our earlier remarks that there is a strategy taken by the Saudi-led coalition using terrorists to support its mercenaries, and this confession may be through which the Al-Qaeda leader is trying to prove their presence and that they have a role in a battle that has been going on for years. We will continue to liberate all Yemeni lands from terrorist organizations, whether in Marib or elsewhere.
Experts say the U.S. has been using and supporting terrorist groups in Yemen since the beginning of the Saudi-led war, just as it has supported the Saudi war on Yemen. They say the Yemeni army has proven this by seizing caches of weapons bearing U.S. aid logos in Al-Qaeda arms depots.
The U.S. is the main supporter of Al-Qaeda, Daesh, and all terrorist organizations, and it seeks to control the countries in which the terrorists are present. When it comes to Yemen, Al-Qaeda failed in this, and the Yemeni army managed to expel the terrorists from their main stronghold in Al-Baida Governorate. The Yemeni army found tons of U.S.-made weapons in Al-Qaeda's warehouses in Al-Baida, and this is another proof that the United States is the main supporter of terrorist organizations.
Earlier this year, Yemen's Interior Ministry also said Al-Qaeda terrorists are fighting alongside Saudi-backed forces in Yemen's Marib province, where the Yemeni army is pressing ahead with a liberation offensive, which Riyadh denied.
The statement by the Al-Qaeda leader shines a new light on how the Saudi-led war has helped prop up terrorist groups in Yemen with the help of the U.S. Yemenis, however, believe that their army will eventually liberate the entire territory of their country from terrorist groups and occupiers. Abdul Latif Al-Washal, Sana'a.
The Palestinian Authority is experiencing the worst fiscal difficulties it has ever had since its establishment more than a quarter century ago. PA officials say this could soon reflect on its ability to pay its employees' salaries and conduct daily business. The European Union is the PA's largest single donor, but the bloc has not donated any aid to the authority so far in 2021. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohamed Ishtayeh has meanwhile told his cabinet several days ago that the PA hasn't either received any financial aid from the Arab countries for 2 years.
There's no doubt that the PA is going through a real and suffocating financial crisis. Its manifestations are evident. There's a budget deficit, an accumulation of debt, and delays in paying its obligations, the salaries, paying for the education, infrastructure, health, and all sections. It's undeniable that there is a clear decline in aid.
Along with the long-standing fiscal leakages that are contributing to the financial crisis, Israel continues to deduct millions of U.S. dollars every month from clearance revenue transfers. This is in response to the payments by the Palestinian Authority to the prisoners held in Israeli jails, their families, and the families of those killed by Israeli forces.
Taxes collected by Israel on behalf of the PA, including customs duties, constitute a major source of revenue for the Palestinian economy. Israel often uses the fund transfers as the bargaining chip in its volatile relationship with the PA. They do not want for the PA to have any strength. They want to use the money it deducts to keep control in a way or another on the PA.
Meanwhile, the World Bank called on donors to help reduce the budget deficit, saying that the financial situation remains fragile due to high public spending and very low external financing to the PA.
At the end of the day, observers have expressed concern that the increasingly cash-strapped PA could face financial collapse. PA officials say the main reason behind the financial crisis is the lack of international and Arab donations to the Palestinians. Mona Qandil, Occupy Jamallah.
Vienna's International Book Fair, cancelled like many other events in 2020, has come back to life this year. With only vaccinated or recovered people allowed into the exhibition hall, visitors can move freely without face masks. More than 300 publishers from over 30 countries used the opportunity to showcase their new releases. One of them was Iran.
We are also pleased to have another event for Iran's representation of Iranian culture, Iranian science and technology in the format of the excellent and eloquent books that have been produced by Iranian scholars and gifted philosophers.
Books here are mainly bilingual, an opportunity for cultural exchange.
This year, I'm very happy because one of my poetry books, which was published in Iran, is on display here. Of course, Iran is the center of poetry, and Iranian culture is deeply intertwined with poetry. I really wanted to publish my poems in Persian, since my previous work, published here in Austria, was only in German.
For many, visiting the Iran stand was a trip down memory lane.
Mashhad.
I traveled from Tehran to Mashhad by train and then visited other cities by bus. I met a lot of different people, not just Iranians, but also tourists from other countries. As foreigners, we were impressed with the Iranian people's warm response and their positive attitude. It was a very interesting, unforgettable, and beautiful trip. I hope I can visit Iran again.
Vienna's Book Fair is the center of a week-long national reading festival involving hundreds of authors in dozens of venues.
Although many feared the book industry would not be able to weather the storm of the pandemic, hopes have actually risen for the industry, with people reading more in lockdown, some even discovering for the first time the unique kind of pleasure that reading provides. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
On Sunday, the Afghan capital Kabul hosted a webinar titled Muslim World Ulamas and the Recent Developments in Afghanistan. Top clerics from seven Islamic countries, namely Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Iran, Palestine, Iraq, and Croatia, participated in the event. They said the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan opened a new chapter in the country, adding that it's up to the new rulers to form an inclusive government and maintain stability.
Afghans are proud people. They succeeded to defeat the U.S. and its allies and free their country. We hope the new administration learns from the past and understands that no one can rule over Afghanistan with dictatorship and oppression. I think Afghanistan must have a popular and inclusive government in order to prevent disputes.
We welcome the recent developments in our country, as it is meant to cease hostilities and violence on our soil. We are happy that our people don't hear the news of war every day, or at least hear lesser than they did during the invasion. But the fact is that recent terrorist attacks show that we are still far from permanent security and peace.
The attendees also stressed the need for Islamic solidarity and urged the Taliban and Afghans to stay awake and knowledgeable to foil enemies' scheme.
My advice to the Afghan people is that they should launch an educational movement and everyone should be illiterate so that they can detect enemies' plots. In addition, there should be a solidarity between Muslim brothers because their enemies are trying to sow sedition between Shias and Sunnis, especially by carrying out deadly attacks.
Addressing the conference, the clerics also asked the Islamic countries to help Afghans amid difficulties and economic hardship. The participants of the webinar stressed unity among all Muslims, especially in Afghanistan. This as the Taliban government is yet to be recognized by world countries and people are facing looming crisis. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A two-day photographic and film exhibition on the annual pilgrimage of Arba'in began in the Italian capital on Saturday. Arba'in marks the 40th day of the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Imam of Shia Muslims. It is commemorated annually through a march being the biggest in the world and known as Arba'in Pilgrimage from different countries to Kabbalah and holding ceremonies in the Iraqi city. The photo exhibition, organized by the Imam Mehdi Islamic Association and the NGO Arba'in Travelogue, showcases a selection of photos from the world's largest gathering in late September this year. The main focus of the initiative is global justice.
We do our best to bring the message of Arba'in to Europe, to every country, to every city, to every each of one of those people, and say the truth, the Arba'in is follow the global peace, global justice. And global justice, global peace, global empathy is what we're missing now.
There is an amazing atmosphere in Kabul. Iraqi people welcomed us the best way they could. The first time I went there, Saddam Hussein had just been removed. I traveled all the way from Iran to the Holy Shrine. It was an unforgettable experience.
Despite the COVID-19 pandemic, hundreds of thousands of Shia Muslim pilgrims converged on Karbala in late September to commemorate the end of the 40-day mourning period for the death of Imam Hussein.
People at the photo exhibition say Al-Bayin should be seen as a model for our societies, one in which each and every one of us has a role, irrespective of our nationality, financial status, and ethnic or religious background.
I think it would be really nice to take it as a model because you see that everything is there organized by people who are doing their best without any rules, without any fines, without any pushing from the outside. So it can be implemented to our daily life. And hopefully I would say that the people could be inspired by it and try to have it in their daily life as much as possible.
Ciò che avviene durante la marcia del quarantesimo.
What happens during the Arba'een can inspire our societies. Generosity, sacrifice, selflessness, these are values that better our societies, and that's what we should all aim at.
Some 14 million worshippers attended the Arba'een in 2019. Max Civili, Rome.
Ten innocent family members were killed by a U.S. drone strike on a home in Kabul. After the attack, the Pentagon apologized for the mistake and said the U.S. is considering making payments to the family of the victims and will get them out of Afghanistan. But it seems Washington has been indifferent to these promises as the family still awaits justice.
The attack was very horrific to our family. It martyred 10 of our loved ones and shocked those who have survived. When our relatives come here, it hurts them as they remember those innocent children martyred here. Of course, the U.S. should be held accountable.
Justice should be done to us. They promised that those responsible would be tried in a court, compensation would be paid, and they would take us out of Afghanistan. After their announcement, they have done nothing. They must stay true to their commitments.
Afghans and U.S. war survivors have repeatedly asked for meaningful transparency and accountability for the U.S. killings of their loved ones, but they have not received it from Washington so far.
The U.S. has always lied to these people. They make promises but don't fulfill them. For instance, see Ajmal's family that were decimated by the U.S. All of those killed were innocent. It has been 3 months that their relatives are left helpless.
People also believe that during its invasion of Afghanistan, the U.S. military has always killed civilians, lied about it, and finally exonerated themselves. More than 2 months after this tragic attack, the U.S. has not taken any practical steps to reach out to the victims' family or pay compensation to them. And the survivors are still awaiting justice. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, depending on Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the depending on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who is the creator of all, who has created everything, whatever we see in the worlds, in the universe, it is all being created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. On the other hand, we see that Allah has created mankind free, and this freedom that He has given us, that He did not create us as the slaves, as those who are being slave, He created us free, and He also says in the Quran that we have created you as a free man. So there is no one who's been created as a slave. Everyone is created as a free man. So this freedom that He has given us, and obviously He has given us some potentials as well. Those potentials with which boy can become a doctor, he can become an engineer, he can become a lecturer. So potentially, he has perfection in him. He has the capability of becoming anything and choosing any profession. It depends on him which way he selects. But this potential was given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So when we see this in our life, we see that Allah has created us as the human who are potentially perfect. They can go towards perfection and wherever they want. Therefore, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created us in such a way, then obviously it is an obligation on us. It is necessary that we must depend on Him and no one else, because it is Him who can help us in the best way.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of depending on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we said that Allah has created us potentially perfect. There is a narration from Imam Zainul Abidin, the fourth Imam. And he said that, I praise to the Lord who created me in a way that I am attached to Him. And not to the general people, not to the public. I'm attached to Him and I'm dependent on Him because He is noble. He is almighty. He is all-powerful. He is all-knowing. So when I'm attached to such a person who, or the entity who is all-knowing, who is almighty, who has all the powers, who is perfect Himself, therefore, I will strive for the perfection. And if I will not get attached to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and if I get attached to the general public, or I will be dependent on human beings, then obviously because human beings are also poor like me, they are needy like me, because in the Quran, Allah said that, Ya ayyuhan nas, antumul fuqara'u ila Allah, O the mankind, you are needy towards Allah. So Allah is the one towards whom everyone is needy. And when they look towards Allah, when they are needy, when they need something, therefore I need to be attached to someone. I need to get dependent, or I need to depend on someone who can help me, who is helping everyone. And Imam has said that he praised to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that he made him in a way that he is depending on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. May Allah give us tawfiq to be becoming dependent on Allah in its true means. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Limelight. As Arabs and Muslim communities in the United States were subjected to institutionalized racial profiling, this too frequently encouraged individual anti-Arab and Islamophobic actors who further intimidated and committed acts of violence against